Tom Russell. On Clyde One every Friday night from midnight through until 2 in the morning. Our special guests tonight are Jack Bruce and Gary Moore. As you know, they've formed a band, a three-piece band with Ginger Baker. They've called the band BBM. They have an album, it's out, and it's doing pretty well for them. They played in the Battleland just 2 or 3 months back. I was there, it was a brilliant show. Going to talk to Jack Bruce and Gary Moore next. To Clyde One, welcome to Glasgow. A couple of gentlemen were last up here just a couple of months ago playing a sellout show at the Battleland. Jack Bruce and Gary Moore from BBM, welcome again to Glasgow.
Hi.
Hello.
First time I spoke to you, Gary, or the last time I spoke to you, Gary, was you had just finished recording the first blues album, and it hadn't been released. We did a big interview. And you were a bit nervous, how's it going to go, you know? And,
yeah, I am now, actually.
And it ended up doing the business for you. Mm. You must have been quite pleased at that, the success that you got with it, with a couple of blues albums.
Yeah, it was great. It was a very enjoyable time doing, you know, all three of the blues albums, and it kind of, it was a really good way to sort of go back to your roots and start again and lead me to where I am now, really. Which is with this BBM. Mm-hmm. And I'd kind of gotten to the point again where it was time to make another change for me musically. It was a really good time, the whole thing. It was great.
As Waiting in the Wings, and that's from the BBM album. Gary Moore and Jack Bruce from the band are our guests on Clyde One tonight. Gary, can I ask you to tell us the story of how the whole thing came together.
we take turns.
It's your turn.
What happened was last year Jack was doing some dates around Europe, and his guitarist, a guy called Blue Saraceno, left suddenly to join an American band called Poison. And so Jack called me up. There was one date that he had to finish up in Germany, and it was a very special show for him. It was a show that he'd, I think, did you do it every year?
I've done something like that, yeah. But this was a rather special one, yeah, for a few reasons.
Yeah. And so, you know, I jumped at the chance to work with Jack again, because we hadn't really worked together for a long time, and we'd worked together on a Cozy Powell album quite a long time ago on one song, and Jack had sang on one of my solo albums on a track called End of the World. I think it was my first solo album, Corridors of Power. And so we sort of kept in touch over the years, but we hadn't really done anything together musically since. So, of course, you know, I jumped at it and went out to Germany, and we did this show together in a big kind of a circus tent. And the whole thing went so well. I was so just blown away by the whole thing.
It was great too, I thought.
Yeah, so, but, I mean, we just, we both enjoyed it so much that we thought about writing some stuff when we got back to England.
And can I jump in? Because what we started to do really was to write some things for a Gary Moore record.
Yeah,
really.
It was at that time.
We hadn't thought about having a band. We were gonna.
Well, I had.
Well, we hadn't really been sort of spoken about or anything like that. We really thought about. That's what we were trying to write.
Yeah,
anyway.
We were just writing.
Mm. And then, for various reasons, Ginger sort of came along. And as soon as he came along, it just became a band. I mean, it just was as simple as that. Once the three of us sort of played together in the studio, it was just a band. And there was not really anything you could do about it. You could say, well, I've got to go home and stay at home. But it was a band, you know. So it kind of got its own kind of impetus, you know. And we just sort of had to go along with it.
We had to be there.
We had to be there, really. Yeah. You had to be there.
Let's take another track from the album then. This is City of Gold. City of Gold from the BBM album. And Gary and Jack are our guests on Clyde One tonight. Jack, we were talking earlier about live gigs, but of course the BBM, you put some live gigs together just a couple of months back. Did a handful round about the UK, including one at the Battleland, which I got along to and thoroughly enjoyed. Your memories of that show?
I thought it was great. I mean, It's really funny because that was our first real proper rock and roll gig. We did a sort of, how could you describe that? We played at the Marquee, which was, well, it was a secret gig that everybody seemed to know about, you know? And, except us. And we kind of, I think we got so, I know I got so nervous that, well, what happened was the band sort of split up, really.
Yeah.
That night, we all got so into it.
Yeah.
And if the slightest little thing went wrong, it was like, ah! And when terrible things went wrong, it was really bad.
It's even more,
So we all went in different directions. And I was so happy that we had the chance to play somewhere as real as the Burrowlands, because it made us realize the potential of the band, and what a great audience. I mean, that's, I've always found that, though. I mean, I remember going way back, I was in this band with Tony Williams and John McLaughlin and Larry Young, and we had a lot of problems with that band because it was kind of new what we were doing. But we played in Glasgow, and the West, was that place on the hill that used to be Hill Street or wherever it was?
Yes, just off Sockey Hall Street.
Yeah.
I can't remember what it's
called
now.
That was a great gig.
In the old days, wasn't it Picasso?
I keep thinking about the Mayfair, but it's not.
No, it's around the corner from the Mayfair.
Yeah, and it was like playing in the old Fillmore or something. All the audience were like stretched out on the floor, and it was brilliant. And that made that band carry on. And I think the audience in Glasgow got a lot to answer for, because I think they gave us a lot of hope, a lot of belief in ourselves, because they had a great time, and they made us have a great time, and they made us really play the best we could. And I think we all loved it, you know.
Yeah,
I could see that, but yeah. I was.
But bear in mind that was it wasn't. It's not like something we'd done a lot. This was really our first proper
gig.
Right.
Gig, you know.
Yeah.
I can see the two of you. There was various occasions throughout the show when the two of you were going up close to each other.
Yeah.
And you were. Smiling at each other and jamming. You seem to be jamming.
Well, we do a lot. Yeah, I mean, we do. I mean, that's the thing about this band that is so great, that every night it is different. There are different things happening all the time, and it's it's a challenge, really, to play.
For me, obviously, going back to going to play in Glasgow, which obviously I still, like everybody who comes from Glasgow, you never leave it, you know, it's always there in your heart, kind of thing. And to go back there and to have a great audience like that,
yeah,
was brilliant.
I hadn't been there for 7 years or something, I think.
Is it as long as that?
Yeah,
it can be a very difficult place to play, Glasgow. I mean, going way back to when I was with Graham Bond in like 1965, I think it was, playing the Empire in Glasgow. That was with the Chuck Berry Review or whatever it was, with the Moody Blues and all this, you know, that was a disaster, you know, total disaster. And even when we played with the Cream, we played the Locarno with the Cream, there was not very many people there. So it can be quite a difficult place to play. So for us, I thought it was really great that, you know, that it just was brilliant, a great audience.
Another memory that I've got from it, a dead clear memory, was this guy just along from me, and throughout the whole set, every time there's a wee quiet second, he shouted, "Gary, he's busy in walkways."
Did he?
And I was watching your face.
I didn't hear him.
You didn't? Well, you kept smiling, and I thought, that poor man's going to lose his temper, one of these.
No, I don't.
You didn't hear him?
No, it's when you're up there and it's all going on, a lot of that, you know, your concentration's taken up. And
no, I thought I was going to ask.
I was just thinking the same, Naki Fork up and something, that kind of thing.
Yeah, a bit of repartee is always good
in
Glasgow. It goes
down well. The encore, round about encore time, Ginger vanished. Did he simply go for a pee?
He does, yeah. He's got this, it sounds terrible to say that, I mean, for a rock and roll star, but he's got a weak bladder. I mean, you know, I bet you wouldn't have said that about, somebody who, I don't know.
Max Roach.
But, yeah, he does. We do have to consider Ginger's bladder in the set. I think we should kick it around.
I think we're changing the name to Slack Bladder, you know, like Black Sabbath, but That's their nickname, isn't it?
Whose idea was the, after you put it all together, you recorded the album and everything was fine, and then someone somewhere came up with an idea, let's take a photograph of Ginger with a pair of wings stuck in his butt.
Well, that's not a photograph. That's the way he really is.
We have to hide those on stage, we have to paint them black.
Yeah, he's got his special, special jackets and that.
They're folded up behind him. No, we were just in the you know, the photographic studio shooting a lot of different, you know, press things.
So Wim Wenders got on the phone and said, look, you know, I've got these wings that you can rent.
No, they were just there in the studio, and it was actually for fun at the time, and the photographs just turned out so great. We thought it was a really special photograph, and we thought it would make a very strong image for the band, and also we actually had the title before that, didn't we? So Around the Next Dream, and we thought it fitted very well with the title because angels and dreams and everything.
Well, it's also
connected.
So great to sort of annoy all the sort of politically correct people in America who when they saw that picture, because he's smoking something, and they said, "Oh, we can't have this. He's smoking a cigarette." And we said, "No, it's not. It's not a cigarette." They said, "Oh, that's all right then.
That's okay."
So, you know, it was obviously meant to be.
His drummer, I saw Cream once, I can't remember where, I think it was Newcastle City Hall or something, and obviously it's 25 years or whatever.
Years ago.
And obviously memories blur. I don't really have much of a memory of it, I just know that I saw the band play.
Quite good, eh?
I've seen a lot since. And watching Ginger up there, his drumming seemed so simple. Just a little kit, fairly simple, and yet the amount of noise he makes.
Yeah.
Has it changed from when you played with him 25 years ago?
I would say he doesn't play quite as intensely as he did then. But I think a lot of that is to do with the fact that we have much better equipment, you know, good PAs and so on. You don't have to. The great thing about Ginger's playing is that he's not a basher, you know, he doesn't bash out backbeats all day, which that can be fine. Somebody like Charlie Watts, for instance, that's all he does, you know, he doesn't really do much else, he'd be the first to admit that, but he has a really nice kind of feel on that. Ginger's a different kind of a player. He plays it quite complicated for this kind of music. He's playing quite a lot, kind of filigree sort of playing and melodic as well. But he's not, you know, he's not playing probably as loud as he was. I mean, I remember when I first started playing with him, when I was playing acoustic bass and we're playing little clubs and there was no amplification. That was really hard because the drums were by far the loudest thing that was happening. But now that's kind of changed. He plays fairly quiet within the band. We have a kind of internal balance with the band, which is nice on stage.
Old Gary, when you were doing some of the Cream songs up at the Barnland, technically the tone that you got, the sound that you got out of the guitar, it was just exactly the same as on the old Cream albums. Was that difficult to capture that type of sound?
Well, I wasn't trying to make it exactly the same.
No,
to be honest,
I don't mean the actual playing. I mean the tone, the sound.
Well, I mean, yeah. The thing is, I'm using, you know, a Les Paul and a Marshall amplifier, and there's only so many different sounds you can get out of those. And obviously, I was inspired in my very early years as a player. I mean, I went to see Cream in Belfast when I'd only been playing for like 3 years, and I was 14 at the time. I was very inspired by Eric at that time, and also the whole kind of, that whole sound that was very popular at the time was the Les Paul through the Marshall, and that's always kind of stuck with me. I've always loved that sound. That's the sound that I'm probably known for. I've just sort of carried it on into the 90s. So it's not, you know, the equipment hasn't changed that much. A lot of the Cream songs, the guitar parts are almost like part of the arrangement, like things like I Feel Free. So you tend to play those very much as they were recorded, because, you know, the chances of you coming up with anything better would be almost like zero, you know, unless you want to just like take away and for the sake of your own ego change it. I don't see the point of that, because some of those parts are such classic guitar parts that it would be a shame to take away, and I think it would disappoint people when they hear it if you just sort of like go off and improvise over those parts. So, you know, there is a certain respectfulness when I do those things to the way they were played at the time. out of respect for the music, I try to kind of, you know, approximate them at least. But I mean, I'm not trying to copy Eric's tone. It's just
very true that many people, quite a lot of people that's a good example, I feel free. A lot of people have done versions of that, from David Bowie to
Mark King.
A lot of people, Belinda Carlisle, and they've all told me, because of the way that I wrote that, it's so tight, the whole thing is an arrangement, if you know what I mean. You can't actually change it. You've got to do that solo like that. It's part of the whole, you know. So I think it's completely valid. But the other point is that I'm using an even older instrument than I used with Cream. I'm using an EB1 from 1958. And I'm also using Marshall equipment. And that's deliberate. It's deliberate because that's a kind of classic... It's a classic sound, you know. Normally I would be with my own stuff in the past. I've been playing fretless bass and very modern basses, but it's nice to go back and use those old things because they, in a sense, it's almost like if you have something like a string quartet. You know, you've got a couple of fiddles and a viola and a cello, and that's what it is. You know, so what we're trying to do is to carry on this classic thing that happened to exist at that time, and those instruments were a lot of the reason why Hendrix or Eric Clapton or anybody played in that way, because the instruments lent themselves to those sounds, you know, and that's what we're doing. But we're not deliberately saying, well, how can we copy those sounds? And you know, because a lot of people now, you can buy sort of little boxes that will get an approximation of those sounds through any guitar. We're just trying to carry on the stuff that you know, that we started, really.
The track we're going to play out with is, in my opinion, one of the outstanding songs on the album, Why Does Love Have to Go Wrong? Could you just tell us a bit about that song just before we play out on it?
No, don't let me talk about it. Well... I mean, the thing about writing the songs on this record, it's been, like, totally different for me because, and for Jack, I imagine, because there have been occasions where we've actually written for each other in a funny sort of way. And that song, when I had, like, a sort of a chord sequence and stuff, and, I mean, to consider Jack's voice, you know, was one of the prime things. So the melody line and everything, it's, like, tailor-made for Jack's voice. And, I mean, the lyrical content is very simple, really. It's just about, you know, why does love have to go wrong? It says it all right there. And really, it was a very simple thing. And when we got in the studio, it was kind of like half written in the studio between us all, really. And we just kind of jammed around with it, and it turned into this big sort of epic track and ended up like it is now. But the structure of it is very simple, but Jack's voice sort of like takes it. It is very, it's quite similar to an old Cream song in so much as We're Going Wrong. You know, it is similar in that Jack...
Has this very like folk song as well, the classic.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. So there are similarities there, and because Jack's voice just sort of like sails over it, and it has that very fluid, gentle style of singing, so very long sustained notes at the end of each line, takes it into that area. But yeah, I mean, it's one of my favourite tracks from the album too.
Mm. We'll play out with it, Gary and Jack. Thanks for coming and chatting with us tonight.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
Wish you all the best with the album, and hopefully you'll be back in Glasgow fairly soon, playing some of the songs again for us.
Certainly hope so.
Thank you. Thanks again to Jack Bruce and to Gary Moore for coming in to Clyde One for a chat, and I'm sure we'll see them again in concert at the Barrowland in not too distant future. This is Clyde One. Weekend Times is changing for the better.